Let's see. There we go. Heck. I'll do that later. Okay. We had a little problem with Mixler. We're trying to do this on Mixler. Hello, everybody. It is the John Thomas Hill Show. Today's topic is a pretty broad one because I think we need to talk about how America can get its groove back again. Like the movie House. Let me do something real quick. Ah. Stupid phone. Now America. And get. I hate phones sometimes. It's. Groove back. Okay. All right. So now that I've got that out of the way, and we're on both Mixler, Anchor, and Spreaker, welcome to the John Thomas Hill Show. After a rough start, here I am. Thank you for joining us. Oh, great. Let me go back. There we are. We're still on there. I'm still figuring out the Mixler thing on my phone. So, here's the thing. It's an election year. We've got two candidates who are old as old can get. Let's not sugarcoat it, folks. Both guys are in their 70s. Both guys may not very well make it to the end of their term of the term in 20 at the end of 2024. So, what can we do to make things better? What can we do to make America better? Well, here's my platform if I were running for president of the United States. The first thing I would do is fix the infrastructure of this country. It would be a massive program. $5 trillion over 10 years. To fix and repair and replace and improve our infrastructure, bridges, railroads, highways, what have you. Just get it done. It would be a massive infusion of economic prosperity in this country because everybody complains about the roads. Some states do a good job. This state used a great job with their roads until for some reason we decided, well, that money that goes to the roads could be used in other places, and our roads are going pot almost as bad as South Carolina. South Carolina roads have been bad for a very long time, and they're now just deciding, hey, we probably need to fix these roads to make them better so that, you know, it'll help business. And some states in the Gulf region are even worse than we are. I won't mention any names. Alabama, Mississippi. So, yeah, here's the thing. Infrastructure. We need infrastructure in this country to be better. The money we've spent on this war on terror in Afghanistan and Iraq, if we'd have just done our business in Afghanistan, put Osama bin Laden to ground within 6 months, came back from Afghanistan, let them deal with their problems, just tell them, hey, we're not going to mess with you. We could have a lot of that money for our infrastructure. Instead, we've wasted it on pointless wars. Oh yeah, but we got rid of Saddam Hussein and we're better how? Explain to me how we're better. We're not. I don't think it's really improved the Iraqis' lives all that much, if any. Depending on who you ask, some people's lives are improved, some people's lives are not improved. Depends on who you ask. The infrastructure has to be something we deal with in this country because we have got to be better than we are right now, ladies and gentlemen. We are terrible right now with our infrastructure. And we have to do, and we've been neglecting it for 40 years. Because we've cut taxes so much and we cut spending on things we need to really spend on, and kept going with this arms race. And now we don't really have anybody to fight right now. China doesn't really want to fight. They just want to react if we decide to pick a fight with them. They don't really want to battle with us. They've not been in a war in 40 years. The last time they were in war, they fought in Vietnam. And yeah, they got their butts kicked by Vietnam, because they thought they could just mosey in there, and Vietnamese said, I don't think so. If we could beat the United States, we sure as hell can beat you. And that's what happened. Go look it up. China tried to pick a fight with Vietnam after Vietnam got done with their little civil war that claimed a lot of American lives. Well, Vietnam showed them otherwise. So, after we get done with infrastructure, what next? Education. And all this business about, well, the government shouldn't get involved in education. Yes, it should. We're in a global economy, folks. Whether you like to admit it or not, whether you hate it or not, we are in a global economy. We are competing against people around the world, and our education system is not getting the job done. How do you fix that? First of all, you build better schools. There are a lot of these inner cities whose schools are garbage. Buildings are falling apart. They need maintenance seriously badly. Not just in the big cities, but in areas where they have not invested. It's time for the government to step up and get it done. Build new school buildings. Build better school buildings. Pay these teachers what they're supposed to be made. Invest in teachers. Invest in good facilities, and not just in a bunch of bureaucrats who don't do anything. Let the teachers teach, for Christ's sake. Let them teach. Stop this bull crap of standardized tests all to death. Let the teachers teach. Have objectives for the teachers to meet, to reach. And let the teachers do their thing. Let the teachers run the thing, for Pete's sake. That's what you need to do, ladies and gentlemen. Let the teachers do their thing. And stop this bullcrap about a private sector can do better. Of course, no, it can't. Private sector is about making profit. And I'm going to get to a certain thing about private sector here in just a second that's really going to have me go off. Give every kid a good public education that gets them ready for either a job out of high school, or a vocational, or trade school, or junior college, junior community college, or a college atmosphere, to where they're ready when they graduate from high school, they are ready to go to live in the adult world. And that includes teaching them the facts of life, not just about the birds and bees, but how to. I believe every kid should take one semester of home ec and one semester of shop. They can learn how to sew. They can learn how to make biscuits. They can learn how to fix a faucet. They can learn how to change a light bulb, do basic repairs around the house, and do basic homemaking. That would go a long way to help kids get better. And yes, I believe we should have sex education, not abstinence-only education, abstinence emphasized, where you teach them all about birth control and all of that, but show them that the best way to avoid getting pregnant is to abstain from sex. And not just from a moralistic point of view. Don't throw the Bible at them in this. You can do it. Let the churches deal with it, the Bible stuff. Hit them where it hurts, the pocketbook. For example, when I was in eighth grade, we had sex education class. And I innocently asked the teacher, how much does it cost to have a kid? The teacher rattled off a whole list of things, the price of diapers and food and all of this. And I got to thinking over the course of 18 years, the investment in 1985, mind you, or 84, 85 around that time, 35 years ago, how much that was compared to today, which is a lot more expensive. You want to teach your kid not to get girl not to get pregnant, or boy not to get another girl pregnant? Show them how much formula costs. Show them how much diapers cost. Show them how much baby clothes and baby shoes cost. And tell them how often they're going to have to buy new stuff. Show how much food is. And trust me, the government's not going to be able to give them enough to get through. That will do a lot of good. It won't save every baby. And I'm going to get to abortion here in a little bit. Because that's part of the reason why I'm so... That's why I'm so stressed. Want to stress so much about improving the lives of teenagers, making sure they understand the consequences of their decisions, but also the fact that they can deal with those consequences, giving them the life skills to deal with adversity, to deal with a setback. You see, the problem today, ladies and gentlemen, with us raising kids is the fact we don't teach our children how to deal with adversity. When they lose a game, we don't teach them how to respond to a loss. We either get mad they lost, or we go, oh, no, it's no big deal. We say, okay, what did you do wrong? How do you fix it? And how do you get better? And teach them, hey, you could have done that. You could have played absolutely really well and still lost the game. And teach them how to deal with that. We need to teach these children that. Parents are not getting it done. I'm sorry, they're not. Some are, a lot aren't. And my mom did the best she could, but if you want to be honest, if she were here right now at 81 years of age, considering all that she's gone, I'll be the first to tell you. She'll probably say, look, I could have done a better job. I remember on her deathbed we had this conversation. And she was honest with me. She says, yeah, I could have done better. She did the absolute best she could, given the circumstances. She did as given the circumstances she had, she did the absolute best she could with what she had. And I think she was as honest, and when she said she could have done a better job. And that's not knocking her. You know, great players, great coaches, great people know that they could always do better. And I had a great mom. Because she had done better, yeah. And some things, yeah, she could have. She also admitted that. And it'd take a long time to describe this conversation. But we had that. And it was a healthy one. Because she knew that she couldn't give me the opportunity to take advantage of opportunities that I had because she couldn't afford them. Or she didn't know about them. And parents try to be too perfect. You're going to have to let your kid fall on their face from time to time to learn how to pick themselves back up. You can't just rush over and help them up. They got to pick themselves up. They got to deal with breaking a bone. They got to deal with pulling a muscle. They got to deal with losing a tooth. They got to deal with getting a bad grade. If we can teach our children to be more resilient, to be more well-rounded, to be more introspective and I guess, whatever you want to call it, basically be able to see the big picture, see the world beyond themselves, which is a big problem in this world today. We're too self-centered and self-absorbed in this culture. And I'll be the first to admit I've been guilty of that myself. From time to time. And I'm getting better at it. There is no such thing as a perfect education. But we have to get our kids ready, not just for a particular field, but for life itself. Because I can guarantee you, there are a lot of kids who think they've got what they want to do for the rest of their lives planned out to a T. Your parents may have planned their kids' life out to a T. As soon as they graduate, they go, do I really want to do this? Do I really want to do that? I don't know really what I want to do. We have to teach kids how to be to deal with all of this and to make good choices. Or if they make a bad choice, how they can deal with it. How they can rebound from a bad mistake. You know, if they don't understand consequences, When they do something really bad, like break into a house and steal something and get caught by the police, they'll understand there are consequences to that. Very bad consequences. Including if the police aren't there in time, the owner and the homeowner is there and has a gun. We need to teach these children how to deal with consequences. Choices, consequences should be taught in schools. Not just, well, if don't blame the teacher if little Billy got a D in history. Find out why, what Billy's not doing right, and maybe Billy just doesn't like history or sucks at history. But he's doing great at other classes. He's great at math, great at English, sucks at history. There are people like that. I was great at history. I was decent at math, was really good at science, sucked in English. But yet I'm a writer. Go figure. Here's the thing. If we have a really good educational system, we don't need the prison system as much. And there is the problem. In a lot of places in this country, we have a for-profit prison system. Whether it's the local county jails or city jails or the state jails or even the federal government jails. Let me tell you about profit-driven businesses. Note what I said, profit-driven. What is their first objective? To make a profit. Okay? Most businesses, if you're a small business, yeah, you want to provide a great service, but you also have to provide a profit to meet your bills and also to make a living, you know? You want to make a profit in anything you do. But if you're a corporation, that's your main objective. Because you've got shareholders that go, well, all this is well and good, but you brought a dividend in, but I wanted a bigger dividend. And if you don't give me a bigger dividend, I'm going to take my money, sell my stock, and give it to somebody else. This is the problem with for-profit prisons. The power is not in the judicial system anymore, it's in shareholders. Because if you've got a prison that's run for profit, what do you need? Prisoners. What if you've got a criminal justice system that is keeping people from committing crimes? Why do you think there's such a push to not legalize marijuana? Not because it's dangerous or anything like that, but because it'll keep people from going to jail. You see? If you have people that don't go to jail, what's the reason we even have a prison to begin with? There you go. If you don't have prisoners in a prison, a for-profit prison, they're not going to make a profit. And that is the reason why we're having a lot of these problems, because cops are getting pressure to arrest people. They may not have quotas per se, but I can guarantee you there's some sergeant or some person above that sergeant saying, we need to get some arrests. We need to show we're doing something about crime. And instead of dealing with little petty crimes and teaching, you know, citing them and scaring the crap out of them, we're sending people to jail for years that shouldn't even be in jail to begin with. For petty crimes. What does that do when they get out? They're not going to get a job in a lot of places. There are a lot of corporations and companies that are doing better by hiring people who have gone to jail, either for misdemeanors or felonies. But it's not enough. So if you can't get a job, or nobody's willing to hire you because you have a record, what are you going to do? You're going to flip burgers, or you're going to commit a crime to make ends meet? Think about it. The for-profit prison system is a huge problem in this country. It's a bigger problem than you can ever imagine. Because at the very heart and soul of it, it's to put people in jail. Not to keep people from going to jail in the first place by having a system that discourages people from committing crimes and keeping on the straight and narrow. If you've got a system in place that encourages people to commit crimes so they can be locked up and go to jail, What is that? What the hell kind of country is that? Not the kind of country I want to live in. Okay, we get to health care. Obamacare is not perfect. There are a lot of issues with Obamacare. And a lot of folks want to get rid of it. But here's the problem. The reason we had Obamacare was we hated the system that came before it, with the pre-existing conditions, with the limitations and all of that. What are you going to replace it with? You hear this topic from Democrats, Medicare for all. The Medicare system does have some fraud with it, but in general, it runs really well. There's every particular system. You think private systems don't have fraud? There's just legalized fraud. Look at, if you go to your hospital, if you go to a hospital and you have to stay there a week, look at your bill. Look at how much they charge you for things that, in 1977, the only time I've ever been admitted to a hospital, when I was 6 years old, was because of chickenpox. To this day, I'm not sure why they admitted me to chickenpox. I don't know if they were worried about something, but to this day, and my mom couldn't even remember years later when I asked her about it. They just did. They said, they admitted me, I think I went in on Sunday, and I left Thursday. I couldn't go back to school until the next week, because I don't know if it was I was highly infected and contagious, because my sister got it, but she didn't get admitted to the hospital. My sister claimed I almost died, but that's not true because I remember all of it. I do. I remember. I don't remember every single little detail, but I remember that I never was in any danger. I never went under. You know, because you can tell. Even a little kid can tell, unless they're like two, that something's wrong. I knew I had chicken pox. I knew I wasn't feeling good. But the thing that really bugged me was they put the IV in my right arm, and I wrote with my right hand. I couldn't write, and ever since then it bugs nurses. I know this, but I asked for the IVs to be placed in my left arm because I'm a righty, and I tell them that story. It's like I'd much rather have it over here. Unless they can't simply find a vein, and I will resist until they simply can't find another vein in my left arm. I don't like having it in my right. I really don't. Another thing is I can't swallow pills. I have a bad gag reflex. Okay. But healthcare. We can't go back to the days before Obamacare. We can do better than Obamacare. Medicare for all is a good idea. But you can also put in private options that allow people to have that flexibility to get the coverage they want. Medicare for all should be a baseline coverage. That should be there in case you really get sick and it doesn't devastate your financial life. That's what people want, is to know that they're covered in case they get cancer, they have a heart attack, or they're going to be in the hospital for a long time. That's what they want. Okay? That's what they want most of all. If you can put that in the federal government, you can have a baseline. Well, we got your back if you get cancer and you got to have all these umpteen screenings and all of this. We can fix the system. The reason it can't be, it's not being fixed, is because you got people that make money off of it. And that's the problem, is that there's so much money being made that we don't realize this is a problem. We're losing money because a certain segment makes money off this that's small compared to the rest of the economy. If we had it to where it was a nonprofit system, I guarantee you businesses would be able to drop having to give people their health insurance because the government would cover it. And the increases in taxes for businesses would be negligible. It would be actually better for businesses that way. Because we're all bearing the burden. You're bearing it anyway if you have a health care plan. That's the problem. People don't say, well, I don't want to pay for somebody's heart surgery in Kansas and I'm living in North Carolina. You're doing it anyway. If you're in a group coverage through your company or through your doing it on your own, you're still in a group coverage. You're paying for a service that is going to help somebody else, because you're paying a lump sum into this and they're taking that money out to help pay over here and that. You think that it's just for you? Yeah, you're required. I think, I don't know if it's still required, but you were required to have health care coverage, or you paid a penalty. The penalty wasn't really as much, because all things considered, but it was to encourage people to get a health care system, at least get some kind of health care coverage. We should do more. Help companies provide better health care systems. Help bring down the cost of health care. Because this isn't getting it done. It's hurting our economy. It's handicapping things. And we can go to student loans. I think we should look at forgiving student loans within certain circumstances. I believe that there should be a program where if a person is able, they can work off their student loans by volunteering in the community. Or if they are in a vital field, like teaching, like being a doctor, or being a police officer and whatnot, and they got student loans, depending on their amount of service, forgive a year or two for every year they've served. Some way or another, we can do this to where we satisfy this idea of not just giving somebody something. And these people have either earned it or have earned it through their work. Figure out some way to forgive these student loans, but do it in a way that people aren't just, because I've seen people go, well, I paid my student loans off. Why should somebody get it off for free? Maybe it's because there's something bigger than you. Maybe it's because we have an economic problem where you've got people that should be buying homes that are worried too much more about their student loans and they're not buying homes, and the housing system isn't selling as many homes as it could because they're all paying for student loans. Figure something out. Convert those loans to something else, like a mortgage or something, where you're paying, the student loan is paid off essentially by the mortgage, you're paying more on the mortgage for your student loan. Or something like that. Something like that. We gotta figure this out, folks. There are a lot of different things. The space program, I firmly believe in it. I think we have wasted 50 years. 50 friggin' years. We went to the moon and then we've not done squat. We had a space shuttle that didn't do anything but put a space station up and put up some satellites up. They were supposed to do a whole lot more. We should have been Mars by now. We should be doing mining on the moon and the asteroids by now. We should have a whole space industry right now where people are constantly in space. I'm not talking about two or three. I'm talking about hundreds, maybe thousands, maybe even more than that. Okay? I'm 49 years old. I was a space nut as a kid. I'm still a space nut now, and I still think we screwed up. We screwed up. We did not put our efforts towards putting more emphasis in space. There's a lot of money to be made out there. There's a lot of stuff we can mine on the moon and the asteroids to bring down Earth. And I could go into infinite detail about that. Oh, you know, we should solve the problems on Earth before we go into space. We've been trying to solve problems on Earth for 6,000 years or whatever, how many thousand years humans have been around. Maybe, just maybe, we should give space a chance. Maybe, just maybe, if we had people go live on the moon or Mars, maybe that would actually help solve problems here on Earth, because we'd realize, you know what? There might be a big asteroid with our name on it comes down and squashes all life on Earth. But at least people would be surviving. Okay? There are a lot of different things. Foreign policy-wise, we should be tougher on China. Yeah, I know. But we should not be so tough that they're alienated. It's a very fickle thing. Okay? Yeah, I believe Taiwan should be an independent country, because it essentially is right now. It's just the rest of the world, including us, will not officially recognize Taiwan as an independent country because we don't want to piss off China. Because China's got such a huge, gigantic economic market. And they know it, and they know how to use it. Because their government is all about making China number one. And I can tell you right now that the two biggest problems American president, no matter if it's Trump, no matter if it's Biden, no matter who else it is in the future, the two biggest problems they're going to have are China and Russia. And maybe even India, if India ever got their act together. And maybe they will one of these days. If they ever did, same goes with Brazil. Those two countries have a lot of things going for them. They just do not have stable enough governments or stable enough societies to sustain it. It's like they've got the tools together to make something and make themselves a great country. They just don't know how to use them. You got some smart people over there. It's just for some reason, whether it's corruption, whether it's outside influence or whatnot. In India's case, it's probably Russia and China together. In Brazil's case, it may be even ours, because we don't want to have a rival here in the Western Hemisphere. And Canada's our best buddy, our younger, cooler brother. Mexico is constantly a mess. If Mexico ever got their act together, they could rival us. They got the resources. They just have been so corrupt for so long, and people keep accepting it. We need term limits. We have corruption in this country. We have the most corrupt president in our country. And his supporters will ignore that, but it is blatantly obvious he's corrupt. Now, I'm not saying Democrats aren't corrupt themselves. Trust me. Do you think for one second I thought Hillary Clinton was going to be clean as a whistle if she got the presidency? Hell no. She probably would have had her fair share of scandals too. It's just this guy makes Hillary look like an angel. I'm sorry. When all is said and done, when he's dead and buried, and when he's long gone, and historians are writing, they're going to find stuff that we didn't know, we should have known about, we don't know about, or other where he's hidden it, or we've ignored it. Okay? If you vote for Donald Trump this year, you're an idiot. I'm sorry. I gotta call it like it is. If you vote for him with everything he's done wrong, everything he has, all the corruption, he's blatantly corrupt. He's blatantly nepotistic. I'm sorry. What does Ivanka Trump do for the government again? What's her official title? What's the official title of Donald Trump Jr. and Eric Trump and all this? I'm sorry. They're making money off the government, and they shouldn't. They're not supposed to, because it's illegal. Okay? It's illegal. We put those laws in there for a reason. But now, because it's Donald Trump being in there, oh, we got to get rid of him. No, we don't. We shouldn't. There's a reason we have those laws in there, to protect the people of this country from corruption. And he is corrupt. And we have wasted 4 years on this jerk. All he's done is a big tax cut, and you don't even feel it. Okay? Did you not get as good of a tax refund as before? Guess what? You can blame him. I took $20 more out each check because I knew what was coming. My refund this year was just a little bit more than last year. And that was taking $20 extra every week out of my paycheck. And the new job I'm about to start, which has started on Sunday officially, I'm taking more money out, I think $10 extra a week. Because if I don't, and I think I'm going to refund, I'll probably wind up paying. And I don't want to pay. And let's get to this coronavirus thing. If you can't see with your two eyes, he screwed this up. He's going to try and put all this blame on everybody else but himself. What do leaders really do in crisis situations? They stand up and say, okay, we could have done better. I could have done better. Here's how we fix it. We know the man's human. We know anybody that occupies the office of President of the United States is human. They're going to make mistakes. They're going to screw up from time to time. And I'm all fine with somebody admitting, hey, I screwed up here. As long as you're willing to admit it and at least try to fix it. Okay? What do we have in the White House? Somebody who is blatantly obviously that he screwed this up. And he doesn't want to get, it's an election year, he doesn't get blamed for it. He's going to get blamed for it. You're President of the United States, you're going to get blamed for it. But guess what? He is going to do everything in his power to avoid getting blamed. And he looks even more guilty by doing that. So, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, you have a choice to make in this election. Do you want to keep a president in there that isn't really doing anything but lining his own pockets and the pockets of the rich, not really doing anything on illegal immigration? He keeps talking about this wall, but there's not been a whole lot of progress toward that because, as far as I'm concerned, that's all he... This is, it's a monument to his vanity to build this damn thing. Walls can be dug under. They have dug under the border. Okay, dug long tunnels underneath the border. Deep tunnels. They know what the hell they're doing, folks. If you're desperate enough, and by the way, most illegal immigrants who come here, fly here. What are you going to do? Build a wall to keep airplanes out from Mexico? And not every person that comes into this country illegally is from Mexico or even the Central and South America. Okay? How do you deal with illegal immigration? Yeah, you got to tighten the visa laws. You got to be more responsive and let people know, hey, your visa is running out. Either you reapply or you leave the country. But you gotta, with justice, you gotta temper it with mercy. If you find somebody's been here illegally, but they have lived the American life, they have done right by the law, they paid their taxes and all that, don't send them away. Don't send them somewhere else. Say, hey, you did wrong, but because you have done right by the system, by paying your taxes, by obeying the law, by everything else, we'll let you apply for permanent residency or citizenship or whatever it is. You'll have to go over a few more hurdles. You may have to take an extra test or two. You may have to learn English or prove you can at least somewhat understand English. Know some of our history. Because let's face it, if they want to get here to make a better life for that for their families, I'm for it. I'm fine with it. We are the greatest country in the world when we want to be. People want to come to a great country. I also think we might want to say to this person, hey, you know, maybe you want to help your people back home make that country better so they don't, not everybody's coming back from that country because, you know, if all the smart people leave Mexico, what's going to happen? Not that everybody that's smart's left Mexico. Because some of them are in places where they can take advantage of the system. Mexicans in Mexico can tell you it's a corrupt country. It's not that they don't care, it's just that they don't know how to get rid of the corruption. It's so entrenched. It's like trying to cure cancer. How do you do it? There's all different kinds of cancer. There's all different kind of corruption in Mexico. It is so deep in that country. And not, there's no easy way to get rid of it. Same here. We got areas in our country that are corrupt. And this brings me to the police. We need reform in the police departments. There's a reason for that. All these protests, all this pulling down statues and all this, there's a reason this has been happening. This has been bottling up for centuries. not just for years, not just for decades, for centuries. We have oppressed African American, black people, whatever you want to call them, for 400 years. 250 years and chains of slaves, 150 years with Jim Crow laws and segregation and all this, and even now when you got all these segregation laws gone, and Jim Crow laws gone, you still have systemic racism. It's very simple. If I walk into a store, and if an African American friend walks into a store, and all we're doing is looking around, judging what we might want to buy next time we get paid or something like that, just checking some things out, getting some ideas for the holidays or for a birthday or whatever, who's going to be suspected of stealing? Be honest about it. We're dressed the same way. We're groomed fine. Let's say we're both in suit and ties. Who's going to get suspected of stealing something? You know the answer to that. I've been in retail. I've known people who work loss prevention. And I know some managers who will look at an African-American person that may not be impeccably dressed, and they'll go, I think I gotta keep an eye on this person. Yet, if a white person dressed the exact same way, looking exactly shady, they will not suspect them. And you want to know something? More often than not, white people steal than black people. And not just because, based on numbers, it's because I've seen it. I guarantee you, if you looked at the numbers, more white people per ratio steal than black people. But because of our racist system, we have been either consciously or subconsciously brought up to believe that black people steal and whites don't. Black people commit crimes, whites don't. But if you look at the statistics, white people are as much likely to commit a crime as a black person. I learned a long time ago that in every ethnic group, every demographic group, you're going to have good people, you're going to have bad people, and you're going to have indifferent people. And you're going to have people all along that spectrum. And more often than not, the ratios between every demographic are going to be the same. Just because you're white does not mean that you're blessed by God, that you're genetically superior, or you're superior by grace of God. It is skin pigmentation. That's it. Skin pigmentation. That's the only difference between an African-American person and a white person. That is it. Yeah, there's some cultural differences, but those cultural differences are, you know, there are English people who hate Italians, who think Italians are corrupt, who think the French smell, you know. There are ethnic tensions among white people. And this whole idea of white power and all is so stupid. White supremacy. I've seen people profess white supremacy. If that is the ultimate pinnacle of human evolution, we're doomed. We're doomed. Bring in the Martians. We're doomed. We have not done well. If that is the pinnacle of human evolution, white supremacy, the people you see waving their Confederate flags, donning the hoods and all this, if that is the pinnacle of human evolution, then human evolution sucks. We are a lot further back, because I can guarantee it. I'll tell you God's honest truth. They're trashier than any trashy person in any other ethnic group. Because they deceive themselves into thinking there are black people who think they're superior to white people. There are not many of them, and they're just as wrong, because we're equal. There is nobody else better than me. There shouldn't be. I mean, they may be better in certain things, but overall, nobody should be considered superior to anybody else. And the law should be the same way. If I kill somebody, I should have to face the same consequences as a black person kills somebody under the same circumstances. Same if I steal, same if I assault somebody and all this. And you know damn well, it's not like that. We've known that for a long time. There are people who like it that way, who want to keep that system because it benefits them. Or they think it benefits them. If you look back at history, right after the Civil War, there was a brief moment where poor blacks and poor whites were communicating, talking, getting together, and thinking, hey, we can come up with an alliance, a political alliance, and help ourselves out. They didn't want to get rid of the rich people. They just wanted to have a better life for themselves, their black neighbors, and all this. The rich people, the rich white people saw this. You can go back down in history. Do you know what happened? The rich white elite went to the pastors in the churches, put extra in the tithe bucket, and said, you tell these poor white trash, which is what they looked at them. I'm sorry, if you're middle class or lower class white person, that's what the rich elite looks at you like, that you are white trash. I don't care if you have raised great kids or devout and love everybody and you're a model citizen. If you ain't making a certain amount of money, or you hadn't had that money for a long time, you've not been rich for a long time, you're white trash to them. The reason they perpetuate that is because they want to keep poor whites and poor blacks and poor minorities separate. Because it's not because of socialism, it's because of politics. Because if poor whites and poor blacks got together and realized they have political power to make change, the rich white elites wouldn't be quite as rich. The rich white elites would lose that power. They wouldn't be out of money. That's not the point. It's about power. It's as obvious. It's not a conspiracy theory, folks. It's plain as the nose on your face if you look at it. Look at the robber baron era. The only time we didn't really have this was when FDR had his New Deal, and World War II came along. But from 1932 when he took office, 33 when he took office, until 1980. We had progressive, where had a middle class. We had poor people, at least. And yeah, we had issues. The 70s had plenty of issues, a lot of economic issues. Ronald Reagan comes along and says, I'll just cut taxes. Give the money to the rich, they'll invest. Everything will be fine. The problem was it didn't. Oh, they invested all right. They invested a lot of stuff overseas, tax shelters, and all this to avoid paying taxes. That's the problem. The bulk of the tax burden went from the rich and the major corporations to you and me. That's what happened, folks. And it should never have gone that way. We need to reverse this, to put the burden more on the poor big corporations, the big profit margins, and the rich elite that can afford to pay more taxes. So they don't have to freak out whenever they go see a black person in a convenience store or something like that, thinking, oh, they're going to rob me, because it will happen, because, you know. But guess what? It's been that way. There's a reason why special interests are in both parties. It's a reason why the two-party system sucks in this country, because we're played off against each other. The rich get richer, the poor get poorer. And the middle class is suffering because they figured out through Reaganomics that they can move the burden and they can be free to do what they want with their money. Some of them do what Reagan proclaimed they were going to do. They did invest. They did, but not many of them, not enough. You look at wage stagnation the last 40 years, from 1945 to 1979, wages went up along with production. along with the cost of living. 1980, wages stagnated, cost of living goes up just as much, cost of production goes way up. We're the most productive we've ever been in this country, even despite the fact of manufacturing, a lot of it's gone overseas. Yet wages have stagnated. I think wages have gone up maybe 1 or 2%. And you look at all you have to pay for. Internet is an essential service now. Mobile phones are essential service now. Along with electricity, water, rent, or mortgage, car insurance, and all this. You're paying more just to live now than ever before. And you're not making as much as your parents or grandparents did. Not against inflation or anything. Yeah, oh yeah, I'm making more than my mom ever did. But all things considered, given how much prices have gone up and everything else has gone up, I'm not making much more. Not many people my age aren't making that much more than their parents did. There are people who used to work in grocery stores that could afford buying a house. And there's another thing. It used to be you could get a good full-time job at a store. Now these corporations have taken over and they're like, well, we'll just forget benefits, forget full-time. We'll just make everybody part-time, except for a few select people. And even the full-time people will not get good benefits, will not get good pay, and they'll need a second or third job just to even rent a place. Why do you think people want a $15 per... If you looked at the minimum wage and how much it should have increased from the post-war to 1979, from the way it increased from 1980, you'll know if it kept going the way it had from 1945 to 79 all the way to today, $15 wouldn't even be enough. It'd be something like $17 an hour minimum wage. In my area, $17, $18, $19 an hour is great money. The old job I had, I was making $17 an hour. That's good money around here. And yet, it was hard to make ends meet. And if you're back in the day, you could have one parent working and the other stay at home. Now you got to have both parents working. In some cases, they got to work more than one job. Who's taking care of the kids? That's the problem, ladies and gentlemen. And it can't be just one president that can magically change everything. We have to be willing to change our way to make things better for everybody, to make things better for families, to make things better for individuals. And there is a movement who doesn't want to do that, because if they do that, they lose power. That is why abortion and gay rights are such a political football. The Republican Party will not tell you this, but I will. They don't want abortion made illegal. They don't want a final answer. I don't want to say final solution, because that's got a connotation that's a very bad one. A final answer to it, where this is the end of the debate. Abortion is illegal. Okay, fine. Abortion is illegal. Now there goes your political football. What are you going to do? Gay rights. That's their political football. It gets the evangelicals whipped up. Oh my God, how dare we allow people, gay people, have the same rights as straight people? They make up every cockamamie excuse to say, gay people shouldn't adopt straight children, because they'll turn them gay. Another bull crap. It's division. Why do you think the Republicans are always against expanding voter rights and have to gerrymander districts and such? Not that the Democrats haven't gerrymandered their districts, not that some Democrats in the past haven't done some shenanigans. I don't agree with that either. Term limits. Campaign finance amendment to the Constitution. To where everybody is limited to how much they get. We get big money out of politics. Shorten the political season to where it's only the fall of the election year. That's it. The rest of the time, we don't have to worry about it. We don't have to hear for four damn years who's going to run for president. I guarantee you, whoever wins in November, by February, we're going to start hearing people going to New Hampshire or Iowa to start going, oh, I'm thinking about running in 2024. That's going to happen, folks. It's been happening. It's stupid. Now, I'm about to run out of time here on Anchor, so I'm going to wrap it up. But I'm tired of it. And I'm sick of it. We deserve better, ladies and gentlemen. The two-party system sucks. We should change that. We were warned about political parties by Thomas Jefferson. I know he was a slave owner and all that, and there's a lot of things I could go into. Not all of our leaders are perfect. Some of them, though, had good ideas. Some of them, like Andrew Jackson, should have their monuments yanked down because they were not just racist. They wanted to inflict pain and suffering upon Native Americans. I almost said Indians. They're not Indians, they're Native Americans. I am one of them because I'm part Cherokee. And part of my family, part of my ancestry, was marched from Western North Carolina to Oklahoma. Some of them didn't make it. The Trail of Tears. Look it up. Well, I want to thank you for joining me in this because I have gotten this off my chest. I thank you for joining us. Another time I will probably go on another rant like this. I have wanted to get this out of my spleen for a while. As I like to say, I like to vent my spleen. So I'm glad you have been able to join me here today. Thank you so very much for joining me on this journey. I hope you've enjoyed it. I know you probably didn't agree with everything I said. That's fine. I never said I had all the answers. I just wanted to ask some questions and propose some ideas. So thank you so very much for joining me. Have a great day. Good night. Good luck. And may the good news be yours.